south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Now, you know, gringos, expats, expat wannabes, and gonna-bes are forever asking me about the school systems here in Latin America. Even if they don't have young kids, a lot of potential expats our grandparents, and are thinking about how dumbed down and crappy the schools are up in the States. And they've heard down here in Latin America, the public schools, you know, the government schools are crap too, worse than they are up in the States. I mean, they don't even have desks sometimes, or electricity, or running water. Of course, the public schools in medium and large cities here in Latin America fare a lot better than the ones in the boonies. That's generally where the tax money allotted to the schools, at least the money that's not stolen, ends up in the city schools where the votes are. As opposed to the schools out in the boonies, those lard-ass political pusbag morons don't care about the boonie vote. All the numbers are in the city, so that's who they court. That's so evident when the newspapers highlight the crap conditions of the public schools out in the boonies, showing kids in classrooms sitting on cement blocks instead of chairs. Now, I've visited a few government schools in my time, and I gotta say, the ones in the city can be almost, well, fairly normally equipped. That is, with the basics you might have seen in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. That means no computers, unless donated by charities or do-gooders. But really, there's no use in paying any lip service at all to the public school systems here in Latin America, nor up in the States, because you definitely would never want your kids or grandkids to go there. Why would you when they've got so many fantastic, what I call, helicopter private schools here in Latin America? Yep, and I call them helicopter schools because some of them, even most of them, have heliports. Many of them with staffs, get this, of 30 to 50% gringo teachers, direct from the States. In fact, most medium and large-sized Latin cities have so-called helicopter schools that are not bilingual, but trilingual. Have you ever heard of that? For example, you've got the Swiss school, the German school, the Austrian school. In those cases, for example, the kids will learn 100% Spanish, 100% English, and 100% German, or French, or Mandarin, or Italian, whatever. Now, wouldn't that be cool? Being able to, for example, send your kid to the German school, and by the time he's 8 or 10 or 12 years old, he's 100% fluent in three languages. So bottom line, down here in Latin America, in the K-12 private schools, you know, the ones you have to pay for, there's a huge lag time, thank God, in the dumbing down philosophy that seems to be infecting all U.S., at least, public schools. Which brings me to my mother. Man, what a segue. Yes, she's been down to Latin America many times. I think she's been in 8 Latin countries now. I usually ship her down with one or two of my brothers and sisters every couple years, which is how she's ended up in so many countries and feels comfortable down here in Latin America. Of course, I broke her in easy. First stop for her was Costa Rica. Oh man, isn't it always? Unless, of course, you've hit Cancun or Mazatlan a few times on a package all-inclusive vacation deal. Nothing wrong with that, but it's really not Latin America. As most of us long-term gringos and expats know, when you land in a resort town like Cancun, Tulum, or Playa del Carmen, man, it's nice, clean, first-class living, great beaches all the way. But all you have to do is drive about 10 or 15 miles out of the center of the resort town, and you'll be shocked to see some of the worst rundown slums and scruffy neighborhoods that you've ever seen. And it comes as a shock. That's something a local tourist board does not want you to see. So you can bet wherever there's a beautiful, nice resort town, there are some very bad nearby slums where, of course, all the grunt workers that maintain those resort towns are coming from. Anyway, just a little background on my mother because it does fit in here with the Latin American theme. She was a regular high school teacher when she first got out of college, got a couple of master's, doctorate and stuff, moved on to be a university professor. So wouldn't you know it, when she's down here in various countries in Latin America, she wants to see the school systems too, both public and private. And you know, last time she came down, about a year and a half ago now, she surprised me by pulling out her 1943 grade school report card, of which I have a scan right in front of me. And if you don't think the U.S. public school system, probably a lot of private school systems too, aren't completely broken beyond repair, I'd like you to think about that a little bit as I read to you some of the annotations on this report card. And you know, I think when I put this show up on YouTube, I'm going to post her report card. And, of course, black out her name like it was an NSA FOI report on the Clinton Foundation. Anyway, I want you to see for yourself what things were like and what could be commented on and said about your kid in a report card in the 1940s versus what it's like in first world public schools today in a Common Core PC world on steroids. It starts up by saying, "Congratulations, your child has been promoted to the fourth grade." Then it says, "Please note to parents and guardians, this report card is to bring you a message directly from the teacher to show in her estimation how your child is performing at school." All right, it's me again. Notice how they say in her estimation, assuming all teachers back then were women, and most were, I guess. Well, there's one gender faux pas you can never get away with today. Anyway, it says, "If you feel that the marks and grades that your child has achieved are satisfactory, it's hoped you'll discuss this and express your satisfaction with your child. If they are below what you perceive are your proper standards, you are requested to ascertain the cause and to aid in the making of the desired improvements in your child." Then it says, "It's especially important that you become personally acquainted with the teacher of your boy or girl and also learn of the general conditions of your school. So after examining this report card, kindly sign the card and return it promptly." All right, I'm opening it up, and here's where the grades are. They've got one for reading, writing, drawing, music, spelling, arithmetic, English, geography, history, and get this, manual training and dexterity. And each of these are graded with an A through F, you know, how they used to grade report cards. I understand in the States now it's just pass everyone, tell all kids they're one-of-a-kind superstars, brilliant little snot-nosed geniuses and all that. Anyway, let me continue. This gets really good. Next on the card, it says days or half days absent legally. Then it says days or half days absent illegally. I guess that would mean with a parental excuse versus just playing hooky. Then it says times tardy legally. I suppose that's with an excuse. Then it says times tardy illegally. Then there's a footnote with an asterisk that says, "Note, proper and regular attendance is essential to your child's good work." All right, now, all that stuff I've just gone through seems pretty tame. No impact at all, right? But man, the next part will. Listen to this. Going to the third page in this report card, there's a whole section called citizenship with a heading that says, "The object here is to develop an appreciation of what it means to be an American citizen, thereby creating a desire to meet intelligently the opportunities to discharge faithfully the duties of good American citizenship." And then it says, number one, and this is a grading system from A to F again, "Manners," with the subtitle, "Courtesy to teachers," and then there's a score, A to F. So do you think back then you'd get an F if you called your teacher a mofo one too many times? Next, you get a grade for kindness to associates. Then there's another grade for, get this, consideration for the opinions and rights of others. Then there's another grade for civilities of speech. I guess that rules out the mofos, huh? And how about this? In grade school, back in the 40s, you'd get graded on general cheerfulness. Then there's the next graded portion called obedience. Number one, you get graded on, get this, respect for law, order, authority, and authority figures. So I guess kids who parrot rap songs saying, "Kill the cops, cops are pigs," etc., will probably not excel in that category. Number two, a grade for willingness to respond to directions. So I guess if a teacher told a kid to pick up that trash he just dropped, and the kid said, "Go F yourself," he'd probably lose a few points in that category too. Next, it says you get a grade for dependability. You also get graded on truthfulness, honesty, and you get graded on self-control. But that's not all. You get graded on classroom project workmanship. And you get a grade for a subcategory called interest in doing the work. Here you get points for working up to your potential. Then there's another graded category called respect for property. So kids get graded on the care and maintenance of their desks, books, and general school property. And that's not all, not by a long shot. Get this. You get a grade for consideration of the property of others. You also get graded on the care of your own property. From that, we can only surmise that back then, in the 40s, there was slightly less tolerance for skulls, swastikas, boob, dick, and demonic Satan doodles on desks, book covers, and other school paraphernalia. You think? All right, now we come to a section in this third grader's report card that is really, when you compare it with school kids of today, stranger than fiction. Well, guess what? There's a whole section on patriotism. And in that category, you get a grade for, number one, interest in your own community's welfare. Number two, they grade you on willingness to render public service. Hey, I can't make this stuff up. If you want a copy of this 1943 report card, send me an email. All right, anyway, next category is called reverence. You get a grade for that, too. And under that heading, they grade you on, if you can believe this, attitude towards things sacred. Man, they could never get away with that today. And you know, we're not talking about a Protestant or Catholic school here. We're talking about a public school. All right, then we have another graded section called attendance, regularity, and punctuality. All right, seems fair enough, except maybe for the regularity part. I guess that depends on your fiber intake, or not. Or maybe you get an A if you're a real regular guy, or just predictable and stable. Who knows? Actually, to me, so far, all of it seems fair enough. However, today, most of that would never fly, given Common Core and PCism on steroids, not to mention no kid left behind, social promotions, especially in the inner city schools. Oh, and don't forget, every entitled kid's a potential Einstein, don't you know? But you ain't heard nothing yet. On the final page of this 1943 report card, there's a section called Health Education. They explain the object here is to make health habits automatic through education, therefore adding years to the lives of the coming generation and increasing your child's total efficiency and happiness by the training he or she receives. In this part of the report card, they've got a section called Personal Appearance, and you get grades for all the following. Number one, neatness of dress. That must mean back in the 40s, torn, ripped, and holy t-shirts and pants weren't acceptable. Hey, this ties right in. You get a grade for repaired clothing because, you know, back then, rumor has it, people wore hand-me-downs. Moms actually fixed zippers and darned socks. How demeaning, huh? In fact, back then, people didn't throw away much of anything. Oh, and on this report card, you also get graded on cleanliness of your clothes and cleanliness of your shoes. How about this? You get a grade for neatness of person. I'm telling you, I'm not making this up. It's almost as if we're talking about another planet. All right, let me go on with this. Under the neatness of person category, which is graded, you also get graded on the cleanliness of your face. And you get a grade based on the cleanliness of your hands. You also get graded on the appearance of your fingernails. And wouldn't you know it, this had to be included, the condition and cleanliness of your teeth. And here's one, reflecting on what kids look like today, it says, hair, is it orderly and brushed? All right, next graded category, housekeeping. Number one, you're graded on the cleanliness of your desk. Number two, the neatness of the floor around you. Oh, man. Number three, the neatness and orderliness of your spot in the cloakroom. Number four, there's a grade for the care and condition of your books. Then comes the next graded category. It's called posture. You get a grade for how you stand, a grade for how you sit, a grade for how you walk, and a grade for how you conduct yourself in playground activities. And finally, before the two lines where the teacher and the parent sign the report card, there's a final grade for classwork in hygiene, whatever that is. All right, there you have it. That sort of proves and sets the foundation for what some have called the greatest generation. That would be the people that suffered and survived through World War II. Not too many of them around anymore, but that does give you an idea why the ones who still survive, especially the teachers like my mother, who just happened to come down here to Latin America and have a look at the school systems here, they're reminded of many similarities in their own bygone school days. What a surprise. The schools down here still teach civility, manners, politeness, and good behavior. Quite a novelty, huh? Now, because I know when my mother comes down, she'll pester me to see those things for herself. I asked two of my gringo buddies who teach at helicopter schools to pass on a few of their blank report cards. They're in Spanish, of course, but guess what? If you translate them, you'll find more similarities to that 1943 U.S. report card than differences. That said, you don't have to wonder why so many young Latin school-age kids are just refreshingly polite, happy, and respectful of people and property. Though, of course, that's not true of every kid. I mean, hey, they've got a lot of gangs and bad boys down here, so where'd they come from? Well, just like up in the States, those are the kids that don't go to school. They drop out early, coming from broken or super permissive families where discipline is practically non-existent. Sound familiar? In fact, I've got a few nephews up in Chicago who I'm sure could benefit from a light to medium ass whooping on a regular basis. Oh, Johnny, you're so mean. Well, you know what? In junior high, we had the principal and the disciplinarian principal. And that guy whacked me 3 separate times with the paddle. Then when I got home, my dad gave it to me again. My, how things change, huh? Oh, and on a related theme, here in Latin America, especially out in the boonies and in poor neighborhoods, when kids want to quit high school or even junior high school, parents won't often get pissed off or try to discourage them, since kids will usually quit to work menial jobs, but they'll contribute some dough to the family. And in poor neighborhoods, parents count on that extra money. So just like up in the States, in lower middle class and poor neighborhoods, there's a high dropout rate, which is why a lot of poor kids and kids out in the boonies are semi-literate. In fact, after I'd been down here in Latin America a while, it kind of shocked me to realize that in every family, there were at least 1 or 2 old-timers that were completely illiterate. That means they couldn't really read anything they signed. And that's one of the reasons there are so many problems in Latin land registries, especially on the boonies. There are a lot of old-timers who have land that was handed down through the generations, but these guys are illiterate. So all it takes is a no-good bureaucrat in a land registry and a scumbag lawyer. Aren't they all? Well, I know a few good ones, but as a general rule, they're pretty scummy. That's why the land registries, especially out in the boonies, are so screwed up and why you have to really be careful when you buy or lease land. Meaning you have to get a lawyer, an honest, decent lawyer, to do what we call a title search, even though title searches don't exist down here anyway. You never want to buy property or land unless your own, not the other guy's lawyer, investigates the property in both the municipality and the land registry. They're different places, you know. Why check the local municipality? Well, that's to see if there's any liens or judgments or mortgages against it. And it's got to be checked at the land registry to make sure the title is in the person's name you're buying it from. But like I said, your lawyer will know how to do all that. And believe me, I've heard cocky gringo expats say, I don't want to pay a lawyer to do any of that stuff. I can do it myself. I know Spanish. Which is why I always say, and I even bet people sometimes, that cocky-ass gringos like that always get gouged to the tune of 10 or even 20,000 bucks just because they insist on doing things themselves. But it's in their nature and their high-flying egos to never admit they've been ripped. Hey, but you know, even the most cautious of us gringos will get gouged a little bit, especially in the first couple years. Sure, it hurts a bit, but mostly what's hurt is our pride. No one wants to look like an idiot. So you can bet those green, gringo, know-it-all expats have taken some hits along the way, but they won't admit it. You run into them at gringo hangouts on the tourist trail all the time, bragging how they do everything themselves, yada yada. I'll bet you a Bitcoin they're not telling you the whole story. Though you'll run into just as many gringos and expats who will lay it all out, tell you about all the times they got gouged. Which always makes me leery of the guys who brag about doing everything themselves. Because I know I've been down here 28 years and I can speak Spanish, well enough anyway. Doesn't matter, there are still things I'd never do without a lawyer holding my hand. So there's 2 things you can take away from this. Number one, you're going to get gouged, at least a little. Expats and gringos who haven't been gouged either have been and haven't figured it out yet. Hey, you know that car or beachfront property you just bought? That was such a good deal? Or they're just plain full of mierda del toro. And are simply protecting their fragile little egos. And I can tell you, I know gringos and expats who've been ripped off or gouged to the tune of anywhere from $1,000 or $2,000. And believe me, that's getting off easy. To one gringo friend of mine who got ripped off to the tune of $800,000. But since that guy was massively loaded, it didn't hamper his lifestyle a bit. But man, to anyone else who wasn't in his financial position, well, let's just say people have jumped out of 20-story windows for less. A lot less. Oh, and where did he get stiffed? Well, give you one guess. Costa Rica. But you know, a lot of gringos are asking for it. They come down here with rose-colored glasses on. We've spoken about that before. And instead of taking them off and looking at things clearly, they see that something might be fishy. They take the glasses off, clean them up, and put them right back on. For example, I can't tell you how many times I've run into fresh green gringos generally who say, "Johnny, you know, I got some dough, and I'm not going to put it in a U.S. T-bill or anything that's making 1 or 2%. You've been down here a long time, Johnny. Tell me, where should I put my money? Where can I make 5, 10, 15%? And you know what I usually tell them? I say, look, just pick up any big Latin newspaper, look in the back classified and wine ad section, and you'll see there are lots of people and advertisements promising big, even huge returns. Some of them so crazy and outrageous that they'll say you can double your money in a couple of months or a year. And man, I'd stay as far away from those things as possible. And remember, most of these green gringos who want to invest some dough and get a huge return, since they rarely or barely speak Spanish, that's a bad start too. All right, then, a little time goes by. I run into them again a year or two later. Guess what? Oh, they found some way to invest their money, all right. Usually, they've told their lawyer they've got dough to invest. He spreads the word around. And inevitably, that money goes somewhere. And generally, unless it goes into an actual physical business that's making a product or selling something, it ends up as a sad, sad story. Hey, I'm not saying your lawyer can't put you together with another one of his clients and you could do business together. What I always say is that your lawyer's there to make sure things are in the up and up, that the contracts and paperwork are A-okay. Because by and large, you know, I've found lawyers are not good at giving investment advice. Neither are doctors nor golf pros at the country club. Though they might be rubbing elbows with the hoi polloi on a daily basis. They wouldn't be working a 9-to-5 if they were world-class investors now, would they? So, by all means, use your lawyer for advice, but not investment advice. Now, about parking some cash in a Latin bank, I get that question all the time. Well, your Latin lawyer will know which banks are solid and which ones aren't. And about those interest rates on CDs and such. Well, generally, with the local funny money, you can get 10% or more per year. And when it comes to dollars, you can get 4 or 5% a year. That beats U.S. bank CDs and T-bills and such by 300 or 400%. Hey, I'm not offering any recommendations here. I'm just telling you what a lot of gringos do who've got some extra cash and want to get it out of the U.S. banking system. Because remember, as long as a foreign bank does not have a branch in the U.S., any stateside lawsuits, judgments, or court orders can never lock up your account or touch your money. Sure, if it's in a U.S. bank or financial institution, just a phone call and your accounts are all locked up. Which is why so many astute expats shift a good portion of their liquid assets to an offshore bank. Though again, you should never take that into your own hands. Try to do it on your own. How in the hell is someone sitting up in Seattle, Milwaukee, or Cleveland supposed to be able to select a nice, solid, strong bank in a Latin country? Oh, but wait, you could check out websites, blogs, and YouTube. Or you could go to the Oracle International Living. You can get all the information there, right? They'd never steer you wrong. Well, let me repeat once again, simply because I've seen so many gringos and expats stumble on this one. Never select a Latin bank or put a substantial amount of money in a Latin bank unless you've had a local lawyer, that is a lawyer who's living in that Latin country, give you the lowdown on banks he uses and which ones he would never use. Now, I know you've heard me say in past shows that you have to have a lawyer to open up a bank account anyway. Well, the fact is, if you've got temporary or permanent residency, you can go down to any bank and open up an account all by yourself. And you'll find all over the net, especially in those international retirement rags, there are agencies and facilitators that will open up bank accounts for you long distance. And no matter how many times I say, don't do it that way, I still get the occasional distress email from someone who's been through that mill and has been taken for a few grand along the way. Fact is, just the other day I got an email from a guy who used a Panama-based company whose address was in a big bank tower in Panama City. They were supposed to have registered an SA corporation for him and open a bank account in the SA's name. And he said in the email, it's been over a year now, he's paid over $6,000 to this firm, and he still doesn't have either. He wanted my opinion, what I would do next. I said, if you're thinking of flying down there and meeting up with these guys face to face, you just might be throwing good money after bad. A trip like that'll probably cost you $2,000 or $3,000 all told. And maybe they'll come through, maybe they won't. Then I said, you should have known better than to try to do all of this long distance without ever having met any of these guys face to face. So yes, there are plenty of outfits out there that say they'll do this stuff long distance. And I'm sure not all of them are scammers. How could they be? But how are you going to know? You can check them out on the internet, right? See if they've got a history. See if they've got any complaints filed against them. But in the end, you know you can't even trust the comments people make on the internet. There's all kinds of trolls, bots, and plants. And even the customer comments on places like Amazon. As I mentioned in a previous show, those comments are often rigged. I told a story of how I bought something and Amazon said they'd give me a free gift if I gave them a 5-star review. That'll certainly skew the numbers, huh? Now, on a final funny but interesting note, most of you listeners probably know the name Captain Mango. Yeah, he came down to my, I think it was second or third seminar and never left. Well, kinda, I guess he slipped back to the States a few times, but basically he's been down here 4 or 5 years now. Well, he is way off the gringo tourist trail, which is cool, and he's started a few businesses. As predicted, he got gouged a few times. Along with that, he's got a few business deals that are chugging along nicely. That's what happens when you've been down a while. You start seeing those niches. And one of those niches he slipped into because he's got a background in commercial flowers and plants. In other words, unlike me, the guy's got a green thumb. So as a natural outgrowth of that, he's in the coffee business now. How do you like that? And since the volcanic soil in the Altiplano region produces some of the best coffee in the world, that means sometimes a coffee plantation just can't miss. But with his background, he also sees there's a lot of room for improvement. So that's a little background to the email he just fired off to me after hearing me discuss in a recent previous show, superstitions here in Latin America. He said, "Johnny, talk about superstitions. I was looking forward to the time when I would be the man on Pepe Mountain." That's his coffee plantation. He says, "I decided to supercharge the soil by starting a small compost pile using old coffee grounds and eggshells. So," he says, "I loosened some soil and began to blend the material in a pile in an attempt to create some super soil for future gardening ventures. The locals, however, would accept no part of this." Obviously, they'd never seen such a setup before. So a few days later, upon my return to Pepe Mountain, my coffee plantation, I found that pile of compost scattered about as if a hand grenade had struck. When I asked the locals why, I was told the natives thought I was conjuring up demons and trying to raise the dead. Johnny, I'm not kidding. I can't even make a frickin' compost pile without some stupid-ass superstition rearing its ugly head. Ever heard that one before? As always, Captain Mango. Well, Cap, I have to say I've heard a lot of weird superstitions, but that's a new one on me. Though the real question is, how many zombies did you raise? Sure, they're slow, but they work for a minimum wage and don't take breaks. You've been listening to the Expat Files Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, you can schedule a one-on-one phone call with me. But first, download my free Plan B questionnaire at www.thenewexpat.com. Better yet, if you want to get your Plan B going from right up there in the States, just sign up for my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. Get the perfect Plan B blueprint by going to theexpatfiles.com/academy. No spamos.